The HBO miniseries We Own the City zeroes in on rampant corruption and abuse within Baltimore's criminal justice system. It features drug dealers, civilians, and the police officers who recklessly target them both. And then, of course, there are politicians and federal agents with competing interests and egos. Now, if this sounds kind of like The Wire, well, they both definitely share some DNA. David Simon and George Pelicanos are its creators, and recognizable alumni from the Wireverse crop up on screen too. But is it more than just a rewiring of Baltimore politics? I'm Aisha Harris, and today we're talking about We Own This City on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Audible with the memoir It Takes a Woman. Hollywood producer and author Devon Franklin explores the emotional journey behind the women who raised him. Listen to candid conversations on topics such as marriage, death, regret, and triumph. Devon invites you to learn the valuable lessons the women in his life shared with him. Visit audible.com/ittakesawoman.
Here with me today is the host of NPR's Book of the Day podcast and a reporter for the Culture Desk, Andrew Limbong. Welcome back, Andrew.
Yo, what's up?
Not much. It's great to be here. And also joining us is Vulture TV critic Roxana Haddadi. Welcome back to you too, Roxana.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
I'm also happy that we have some Baltimore natives, people who are from the area, who know it, so we can...
The Baltimore Bureau of PCH.
Yes, I'm excited. We Own This City is based on the nonfiction book of the same name by Baltimore Sun reporter Justin Fenton. It focuses on the federal investigation of the Baltimore Police Department's Gun Trace Task Force. The team exploited its power by skimming from drug busts and robbing innocent civilians and planting fake evidence, among many other criminal acts. In 2017, 8 members were charged with multiple crimes. Some pled guilty, some were convicted. All of them were sentenced to between anywhere from 7 and 25 years in prison. John Bernthal plays Sergeant Wayne Jenkins, the team's ringleader. Jamie Hector plays a homicide detective who has a fraught history with Jenkins and his team. Now, on the federal side of things, Dagmara Domenchik plays Erica Jensen, an FBI agent investigating the force. There's also a separate inquiry of the Baltimore Police Department happening in the aftermath of Freddie Gray. He's the young Black man whose 2015 death while in police custody spurred widespread protests. That investigation is being led by Nicole Steele, an attorney with the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, who's played by Wunmi Musaku. The series was created by David Simon and George Pelicanos. It's airing on HBO right now. All right, so there were obviously a lot of characters that I didn't even mention because It's a David Simon show. There's a lot of people, but I'm sure we'll get into all of that. But Andrew, let's start with you. What did you think of We Own the City?
I thought it was great. It's almost unfortunate that it'll be constantly compared to The Wire. That, like, every time this show has been mentioned in this sort of press tour, it is, like, living in the shadow of The Wire, which kind of is a disservice. Because the story itself, the story that is contained in the show, is so messed up and so important to know about how policing works that I think it deserves to stand on its own. And I think it does a great job at it. It crams in a lot as to why this story is important. You know, it's their whole systems thing that they do so well. Like, none of this happens in a vacuum, right? And all the set pieces have to take place for these cops to do all the messed up things that they do. There's some problems with it, I think, that we'll get into. But overall, I think it was great and worth watching.
Yeah, I like your point about it being a disservice. Although, you have to admit, when you're watching the show and it's about Baltimore politics, yeah, and you see Marlo Stanfield, a.k.a. Jamie Hector, no longer playing a drug dealer, but playing a police officer, a homicide detective, it's kind of jarring, right? It's like, it kind of invites these comparisons because this is the world. It's a similar world.
But, yeah, and he still has, like, the same cold stare.
Yeah, except now he's on the quote-unquote right side of the law, yeah, as they say. Roxana, how about you? What are your initial impressions of the show?
You know, I really like that it is in conversation with The Wire. It's so interesting. I think, of course, any television show should stand on its own. But I almost think that the function of putting it in conversation with The Wire, casting a lot of the same people on sort of the other side of justice, I think it's really interesting and really intelligent in its presentation of any choice can lead you down a certain path that you might not expect. And when watching it, I kept thinking of the Bubbles line from The Wire about how there's a thin line between heaven and here. There's really a thin line at this point between the cops, who are ostensibly the good guys, and the bad guys in this show. I worked in Baltimore for 8.5 years over the period when this was happening. Justin Fenton and I went to the same college and worked at the same college newspaper. So I was reading a lot of his coverage. So what is fascinating to me is sort of the layout of the show and how it's divided into these different timelines and different subplots to sort of get at the truth of what was happening and how did so many people allow this to happen. And so that's what's really interesting to me about the layout here. I mean, nothing can be The Wire, right? Like nothing can be 5 seasons of novelistic, deliberate storytelling.
Some people have tried.
Some people have tried. Many have failed.
I mean, David Simon has tried, right?
Yeah. I mean, David Simon has also tried. And I think for the most part, his methods are good. But ultimately, it's something where it's like, I think that it is a sequel of a kind to The Wire, but I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I think that you need to close the loop on that TV show and what it was telling us about quote-unquote good cops. And I think that this miniseries does that.
Yeah. It's interesting because in many ways, The Wire was ahead of its time in terms of how it was depicting police. It stood in direct contrast to something like Law & Order or SVU or any of the number of CSI shows that were on TV. Yes, it's obviously it's a different time period, but like what more can be said about this? And since The Wire and since we've had this sort of reckoning in the last several years of how we portray the police on screen, there have been shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine and even Law & Order SVU that have tried to correct for the way they do that. Mm-hmm. And so I was questioning, you know, what more is there to say, especially if The Wire already said it so well. But I do think what I really liked about this version of it, like Roxana, you were saying, it is in conversation in a way that feels natural and feels like a right step towards updating the conversation. And these creators are so good at dialogue and they're so good at making you care about all of these characters, if not care, like have some emotional investment in them one way or the other, whether it's like finding them despicable, like the Josh Charles character, he plays Danny Hursel, who's like probably in a show full of terrible cops, he might be the worst of them all. Yeah.
The new Joffrey for our time, just a maniacal, horrible human being.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so seeing that, even those characters, I understand where they're coming from. And I think about all these other shows that are lesser and that have tried to do this, but like they pile on all these issues in ways that feel less organic and more like checking off the list of things. And I really think this show does a really good job. I still feel like I got a flavor of the city and of these people and all the ways they're connected. And I will say, from the beginning, I was taking very, very diligent notes because I knew I was going to be confused. There's a lot of time hopping.
Yeah.
The present day for this show is like 2016, 2017 when this investigation is going on. But they time jump back as far as 2003 sometimes. Mm-hmm. It can be a little confusing. I'm curious how that played for you all because, again, The Wire is going to come up again. But The Wire had 5 seasons to unfold and this is only 6 episodes. And so I'm curious how that worked out for you all.
I mean, like Roxana, you know, I live in Baltimore and I was living in Baltimore through all this. And like I knew all of the beats and still midway through episode one, I was like, wait, who? Wait, what?
Yeah.
Where are we? And then I was like, there's some stuff that happens in episode one that you kind of have to know county politics between the Baltimore County and the Baltimore City. And I was like, is anybody else going to understand any of this? Like, is this for anybody else other than like those of us in the Baltimore metro area?
I definitely had to rewind a few times.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's just my, like, I did not have a hard time.
Oh, really?
No, but that might just be a function of like being aware of the story and sort of aware of how Simon like frames the tension between the city and the rest of the state. Mm. Like so much of that was key to the political storylines with Carchetti stepping in for O'Malley in, you know, the seasons of The Wire. And so I think that sort of tension of the city and the surrounding counties have a lot of friction. I think that is key to sort of coming into this. But I also, we live in a split timeline TV landscape now. Everything mm-hmm. has a split timeline. Everything starts with in medias mm-hmm. res. So I think that, unfortunately, that is just sort of where we are. But for this, I thought it worked because I think there are a lot of visual indicators about when you're switching times. Mm. We have like the overtime reports that they're filling mm-hmm. out where we see the date. We do have sort of these intertidal cards that tell us we're going 20 years back, 18 months back, all of that. And I think for me, it's sort of a shortcut to what the different seasons of The Wire were doing, where they were building on each other, right? So I think this is the shortcut way of doing this. And that has made for some cutesy dialogue. Like, think of the Wayne Jenkins character and how he was trained. Mm-hmm. Mm. And, you know, like, his training cop tells him, like, this is Baltimore. Like, we do what we want here. And then he tells that to the next trainee that he has 18 months later. So I think some of those moments are a little bit too neat. But in general, I like it. Because when you have somebody like Bernthal, who is so magnetic and in his own way untrustworthy,
yeah,
I think that the different timelines sort of click together around his performance.
Yeah, those cutesy moments were interesting. There's also a moment in a later episode, the Nicole Steele character is talking to an ex-cop turned law professor, and then he just starts rattling off about the war on drugs. And now it's like, and I was just like,
oh, the dude played by Treat Williams or whatever?
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is where it gets a little bit bogged down and gets a little bit too on the nose. Like,
I don't need the dad from Everwood telling me that the war on drugs is bad. Yeah.
Excuse me. I need the dad from Everwood telling me everything. Yeah, yeah. I want all of my political commentary to come from that man.
Everything changed when they came up with that expression, the war on drugs. What the hell is a war on drugs? What does that mean? Waging a war against citizens. By definition, it's separating us into two opposing camps.
The colonizer and the colonized.
Ah, Albert Memmi, very good, yes. And with a war comes...
Obviously, with The Wire, there were always analogs or characters that were based on real-life characters, but they weren't actually the real-life characters, whereas here... We are dealing with a lot of people who are actually like real characters for the most part. And it's a whole nother thing to have this backed by like having the Freddie Gray case in the background. Mm-hmm. And I think it adds a different flavor to it. And I'm curious what you think about how it plays with that, like the reality and the things that it might fictionalize in a way.
I mean, I think that The Wire was sort of clear in who was supposed to be who, if you were a little bit aware of the politics of the city. And so I think that in some ways, unfortunately, maybe created some distance. Like maybe for some viewers, it was just like a fictionalized take on what's happening in this city and arguably all cities around America. So I think you sort of collapse that distance when you use people's real names, mm-hmm. right? And when you're really saying, no, this person did this. And I think that raises the question of why not tell this in a documentary format? There has been a documentary that Sonia Sohn from The Wire created that was about this. And so I think just with fiction, you do have the ability to hype up certain elements and emphasize certain things that you think as a creator are more important than other things. That drug speech is a great example, mm-hmm. right? Like that is one of the key ideas of the David Simon universe, that we have put forth all of this effort in something that is impossible to find a success rate for. It's just, it's not possible.
Yeah.
And I think that just the frustration here is that when you only have six episodes, it's like, do you need to tell me that speech? Like, do you need to lay out the themes that clearly? Or could we be seeing something else? And I think that the series does do that somewhat, like in the later half. But then I do think the finale sort of pulls it together in a way that for me made all those, you know, fictionalizations feel worth it. But I don't know, Andrew, what did you think? You're also from this part of the world.
I think John Bernthal, I think, did a great job as Jenkins. So he does this opening monologue, and that's when you get to hear his sort of white Baltimore accent.
His Dundalk.
Yeah, his Dundalk.
I'm telling you, it just gets you the kind of attention that only makes it harder to do the job. And I've heard it all before. Nah, Sarge, I never got charged for that. We never even went in front of a trial board. But then a month, 2 months down the road, civil suit comes behind you.
He is charming, right? He is very charismatic. But it's all juxtaposed by overshots of, like, cops being bad. And I think this might be among the first, like crooked cop stories where I didn't somewhere in the back of my head think that like, yo, being a cop is cool, huh?
Yeah. Mm.
And I think that's a testament to knowing that these are real people who did real bad things, right? Because like you could be like the worst anti-hero on The Shield or Law and Order or whatever, but because it's fictionalized, there's that separation that allows my dumb male brain to be like, oh man, guns are sick. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
But because it is so real, it's like, you know, happening that grounds it, which I also think is the problem with the Nicole Steele character. Mm. She's the person sent by the DOJ and a composite. And she does a great job. She's played by Wonmi Mosaku, and she's supposed to be like the character stand-in for like everybody else, right? The audience. Mm. And she's talking in episode one to this newbie about how like, I've been here before. I've been, you know, I've seen this one. I've seen that one. But she goes through this evolution where she is wowed by Treat Williams's drug speech about how the war on drugs is bad. And she's like, oh man, I can't believe it. And it's like, how did you not know? You know what I mean? Of all the people, cast of characters, you should be the one knowing.
I see your point, but I also think that before we even get to that speech, she's spending most of her time interviewing other police officers. And we could argue that maybe it feels a little bit overstuffed to have these like two competing cases that sometimes intersect, mm-hmm. but not always. But she's talking to all these cops who are saying, you know, oh man, I left the force, or like I spoke out and now I'm stuck on this really crappy like security duty beat or whatever, and saying like I saw things that were not cool and that go against what we're supposed to be doing. So it's slowly chipping away at her, but you're right. It that pivot soon after the Treat Williams speech is a little neat and tidy in a way that I don't think necessarily was intended by the creators, but I can see mm-hmm. how we feel that way. But I guess that brings me to a bigger question, which is like, do you get a sense of what like Simon and Pelicanos feel about the debate right now around police brutality? And like, because I think it's a little murky.
See, I have a hard time separating David Simon, the annoying Twitter presence, and David Simon and George Pelicanos, the writers, you know, of the show. You know what I mean? It's, but like, because I do get the sense that at least Simon still believes in like this idea of good police, right? Like this idea of like, you know, good policing is still possible if only like everyone from like the executive branch of the government down to like local city politicians would get out of the way and let policing act as it quote unquote should. And it's like, and so I think they still believe in this ideal vision of what police can be, but they have all these like obstacles. And like, it's like, I don't know if I'm as bought in to that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I get the feeling that like they keep their eye on what could be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it is distinctly more bleak than The Wire. I think The Wire had a lot more hope for that. And I think The Wire was sort of arguing for this common shared humanity between all of these people, no matter if you are a corner boy or a cop. I mean, that was a lot of the latter seasons was sort of pairing these people off together and saying like, oh yeah, Jimmy McNulty and Bodie Brodus are not that different, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think with this, you are starting from a place where the motivations are wrong. And if the motivations are wrong and you're entering into a career where those motivations are rewarded, where do you go from there? Is there any way to redeem that? And I think this series is more clear that I don't think you can. And I think the first episode does something really smart with this, where you see a group of men break into a stash house and rob it. And you don't know until like 20 minutes later that they're cops.
Yeah.
Like there is no indication mm-hmm. of what side they're on. So you see them doing a crime and immediately you think they're criminals. And then 20 minutes later, they're, you know, Baltimore police pulling over someone and then falsifying evidence to be able to arrest them. And this is the sequelization part from The Wire. You're getting a greater sense that without those resources, if only they had these resources, then maybe things would be better. But I think that some of that yearning gets lost by the end when you realize like how deep the rot goes.
Mm.
But I think it's sort of trying to reconcile the fact that like, well, what else do we do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't think it has an answer for what else do we do.
Absolutely. Because I mean, at least I don't expect David Simon and George Pelicanos to have the answer.
Yeah.
They gave an interview in Time about the show, and David Simon He said, you know, we don't believe back the blue or a thin blue line is the motif you need to take into a serious discussion about law enforcement. But we also don't believe that defund the police works as a simple mantra that solves anything. And he's like, we live in the middle. It's definitely trying to play both sides in a way.
Yeah.
And I think the show actually itself is a little bit less in the middle. It is more on like, this is everyone's problem. And why did it get to this point? And I don't think there's any police officers in the show that are portrayed as being like perfect, or at least not.
There's like the county cops, I think.
Right.
Another thing that sort of settles in eventually is like in the first like handful of episodes, the federal agency stuff, there's all these like allusions to the presidential election, right? That's like that I sort of like at first rolled my eyes at. Because it was like a little like, ho, 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 can you believe who's gonna win? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it all had this very like, don't say Voldemort's name energy to it. And I was like, what the hell is what's going on here, right?
Yeah.
Once the election does happen, right, and Trump gets elected into presidency, and then I think the show does then make a great point as to why, A, yeah, sure, all politics is local, right? And like, you should be involved in local politics, but like, everything matters, which I think is their whole shtick this whole time. But
all the pieces matter.
Yeah.
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 It just like really made that clear, and then made me feel bad that I was dunking on all of that in the beginning.
Well, you know, it's the type of show that definitely like zooms in, then it zooms out, and then it zooms back in again. So you have to like kind of go with that ride. And it does a really good job of both getting into the nitty-gritty of the politics so that you can understand it. But yeah, I think we all enjoyed it and appreciated it. And this is coming from two people who have Baltimore experience and have lived there. So that's a ringing endorsement there.
There's one line when a cop is like, oh, this neighborhood sucks. And it's like two blocks away. I was like, bro, come on, man.
It is really funny. But again, this is such a Baltimore thing. Like their judgments of like Highlandstown or Pikesville. Yeah. Or like if you're aware of those areas, you're like, wow, that was really mean, actually.
Yeah, there's a pretty good bagel spot two blocks down. I don't understand.
Well, we started off this conversation saying that we're going to try not to compare it to The Wire, or we talked about how we weren't going to talk too much about The Wire, but we talked about The Wire. But
yeah,
I still think that this stands on its own and it's worth checking out. And if you agree or disagree, we want to know what you think about We Own the City. You can find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. Roxana Haddadi, Andrew Limbong, thanks so much to you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. This episode was produced by Candace Lim and Mike Katzeff and edited by Jessica Reedy. And Hello Come In provides music you are bobbing your head to right now. I'm Aisha Harris, and we'll see you all tomorrow when we'll be talking about the new album from Bad Bunny.